This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Mike Salvatore. Hey, it is really great to have a chance to catch up with you on Rise of Iron.
Hi, Kate. It's nice to talk to you. And Rise of Iron was a blast to work on. So let's go.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, what's really cool, I think, is that now that Destiny has entered year three, well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
And now, do you feel like you're really getting more comfortable with the world of Destiny?
Oh yeah, I have been for a while. It just keeps evolving, and I like the fact that each time we do a release, we've got a little bit of a different vibe for each one. So it's been fun. We're not just we're trying not to just repeat ourselves, but we're trying to explore some new territory musically.
Yeah, I really picked up on that with the Rise of Iron music, because it has such a different character than the Taken King. It's a lot less menacing, and it just to me really feels heroic and really emotional.
Well, the emotion thing is something that we really try to bake in to everything we do, because we don't want to be underscore. You know, we want to be we want the music to actually have a point of view. And that's very important to me, you know, as we're writing. I feel like you connect better with the listener if you have a point of view and you try to say something with the music, as opposed to just putting in a you know, wallpaper action piece or something like that. So that's where we try. And if you sense that, then we were successful.
Oh, yeah. It just, well, as I said to you earlier, I was listening to the first pass through the music when I was downloading the patch for the update. And I really got kind of choked up, because the main theme this time, it's really amazing, because it starts out, it's so simple. It's almost like a hymn. And yet, by the time we hear it in the music for the final boss, we've just gone through this really incredible arc. So was it difficult to come up with that theme in the first place?
No, actually, that was one of the very first things. There were a couple different sort of main themes, but the one you're talking about was actually, it started out as one of Sky's ideas. And I remember the first time he played it for me, I was like, hey man, that's going to be a main theme. That, I mean, there's no question about it. That's going to be great. And I think we should, you know, on the back part of it here, we should go to choir. And it was like it actually all happened pretty quickly. One of the nice things about writing music is you can labor over things and you can try different things and all that stuff. But when you hit something that you know is good, you know it's good. And you're, it's like a gift from the universe or something. You're all, you know, we're very happy about it when it happens. Because it's you know, sometimes you can't always predict those things. So it's when you get one of those little gifts and you unwrap it, you're like, hey, this is going to be great. Let's go with it.
Well, it's really interesting the way that particular theme gets transformed in so many different ways, not just with the chorus, but you hear it every once in a while in the brass or the strings, and sometimes it's just a very brief quote. And I guess that's sort of the advantage of listening to the soundtrack, because it's sort of a telescoped version of the game. It's going to be months before I get to that final boss, but it's really neat to just hear the whole arc of it.
Well, I always honestly, I've done this for years, even with Halo, I remember, but whenever I'm writing with a piece or working on a piece, I'm always in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, how is this going to play on the soundtrack? You know, I'm always thinking ahead to that. I mean, of course, you're writing for the game and you want it to work in the game, but there's always a part of me that's sort of like thinking, how this is going to lay on the soundtrack, where it's going to come in, how it's going to fit in with the other pieces. Because, you know, in the end, long after the game is, you know, people have played the game and moved on to other stuff, there's the soundtrack still lives, and you want that to be a piece that people can listen to and enjoy just on its own. So that's always there. It's not at the forefront, but it's always a consideration for me. And Sky, both of us, we agree on that.
Yeah, I'll bet. And it must be a special challenge creating the soundtrack because it's not just a bunch of short little cues. You have a chance to really use longer versions of some of the pieces that maybe you felt worked really well in the game.
Yes, we do that, and I mean, we have a lot of meetings over this. You know, at the time we're going through and saying, well, what do we want to, you know, I think we had somewhere between 250 and 300 minutes of new music in the game, and we cut it down to about, I think it was 90 minutes. So we're picking stuff and saying, yeah, what's going to best represent this, you know, because we have a lot of themes and a lot of stuff. And so we're like, which pieces best represent each of the places and the themes and the moods we want. And then it was funny, we were working on it, and I thought, you know, there are still people out there who would like to just burn this on a CD. Well, you can only get 80 minutes on a CD. So I remember it was kind of at the last minute. I said, let's trim this down. I want to be able to listen to this in my car. And I have an old car. I'm a classic car guy. And I have a CD player in there. And I thought, I want to hear it in my car. And I don't want to have two CDs. So we cut it down again from 90 minutes to, I think, 79, just so we could fit it on a CD. That was kind of a little challenge we gave ourselves to see if we could trim it to that point. And it's fun because actually a lot of these pieces start out as longer pieces. Some of the pieces are 14 minutes long, 12 minutes long, and I have sort of a rule of thumb in my head that if it's going to be on the soundtrack, if it's over 6 minutes long, there has to be a really good reason for it. So there's a lot of editing, trimming, rearranging, that kind of thing to make the soundtrack work.
Well, it's amazing. And you must have had me in mind because that's exactly what I did. I burned it on a CD and I've been listening in the car.
Yeah, I know. And it's surprising. There are a lot of people that do that. And I mean, if we had had, you know, way more music, then we could have made it a double CD. We were so close. I thought, let's just do it.
Yeah, and the thing about that too is that it really focuses everybody's energies, and then you just get kind of the best of the best rather than a bunch of filler. For
hopefully,
yeah. Well, it sounds
hopefully.
Like.
I mean, I like to think that, but it's not for me to say. I would have to let the listener decide those things if it's if that's working like that. But thank you for that.
You know, it almost seems like now you and the other members of the team are sort of like this band of superheroes, right? And everybody's got a special skill. There's Sky with his amazing percussion and Seapal's techno rock, and then his Nine Inch Nails sound, and then you're just kind of tying it all together. And it must be really fun to have everybody to bounce ideas off of.
We have a good rapport with each other, and it's so funny. You actually get the three of us in a room together, and we are mercilessly teasing each other all the time, you know, just about this or that, or the way we all do things. But it's all fun. We have a lot of fun. I have a particular memory of when we first sat down and started playing each other the themes for Rise of Iron, and we were deciding which ones were going to work and which ones weren't and everything like that. It was pretty funny. I almost wish I had a video of that time because, you know, Sky and C. Paul actually went to school together. And so they've known each other for years. They both attended Berkeley at the same time. And that's how Sky became involved in this in the first place. And they are so competitive with each other. I'm sort of like, it's funny, like if one of them suggests a change to the other, or says this isn't working or something like that, they fight over it. But I'm sort of like I'm like the referee in that, and I'll come in and say, no, I agree with this, and then it takes it down. It's just really funny. I can suggest a change and nobody fights with me, but if they suggest a change to each other, then the gloves come off. It's pretty funny.
Oh, there must have been some really amazing moments in those meetings then.
I know that's not a question you asked, but I thought.
Well, no, it's great because it's really intriguing to me to think about working as a team, because so many of the composers that I know just work on their own. And so they only have themselves kind of to set the standards and be the judges of what's going to work. So it must be kind of nice to, you know, kind of keep each other honest, I guess.
Well, I'm a huge fan of collaboration, and you know, if you just really are honest with each other and you kind of get to know where each other's strengths and weaknesses are and everything, it can really work out well.
Yeah, there's a moment in the soundtrack trailer that's on Bungie's website with you and Skye just grinning, and that's to me just seems like what it must be like, especially when you hear the orchestra performing all this music that you wrote.
The audio you're hearing over the grinning and it was put over, it's just a piece from the soundtrack. So I don't know what was actually happening in the room at the time either. It's very possible we both heard something just really amazing and we were really happy about it, or it's also possible we heard a clunker and we smiled at each other. I have no idea what actually happened at that moment. I'd have to go back to the original video and find out what that was, but at least to the public and to the way the final video is edited, it looks like we're just really having fun and enjoying the piece we're listening to. But it's possible that wasn't what was really happening. We
I
might have heard
guess
a bad note on the trombone or something. I don't know.
maybe, yeah. Well, that's the magic of editing, I guess.
Yes,
You can turn
we've
it in, turn
turned it
it.
into something, and maybe that's what it was. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll go with that. You know, one of the things that I've always really loved about Bungie's games, that Myth and Halo and now Destiny, is that when you arrive in the game, there's this sense of really a long history, like thousands of years. And you know, there are those ancient forerunner structures in Halo, and in Destiny, you've got Master Rahul saying, "I don't suppose you speak pre-collapse German, do you?" And so, what's really cool is the way that your music really helps support this ancientness, this oldness of the world. That's one of the things that I've always really appreciated.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm going to give a shout out to Marty on that one. You know, he's back in the early days, that was always a thing that he was pushing for too, which is we want to put you in a place that's completely different than where you are. And I'm speaking about Marty O'Donnell, who was I worked with on Myth and on the Halo games. And this whole idea of like creating this mood, this place, putting you in a different place and taking you out of wherever whatever you're in, was always really important. And that's been a tradition at Bungie for years. And we're doing our best to continue that because it just works. It's a good thing to do. So thank you. I'm glad you noticed that.
Yeah, it gives the music a real depth and a real sense that the music has been around for a long time too, especially when you get to the Iron Temple and you've got that almost kind of Tibetan monk sound that accompanies you as you're roaming around. It just adds a real special quality to it, I guess.
Thanks.
And man, the chorus really gets a workout this time.
Oh yeah, we worked the choir hard this time.
Yeah,
It
what
was,
language are they singing?
it's Latin,
Oh.
and all right, I'll tell you a little bit of a funny story about that. You know how it is when you're working on something and you're alone. It's like, oh yeah, I got to come up with some words for this. So I'm just sitting there doing like Google Latin. I'm Googling Latin phrases and trying to figure out how to make that work. And we had already put a bunch of the stuff in there, and I was really happy with it, you know. And I was had him saying things like, you know, honor and virtue and bravery, and I'm quoting all these words and trying to put them together in sentences. But of course, I don't know anything about Latin, so we have a guy here who I found out after we had already started like printing the parts and getting the stuff ready for the choir, and he came in and said, you know, my girlfriend is like a has a master's degree in it's not in Latin, it's in some other, I can't remember the name of it, but it's something where she actually understands. I'm like, why didn't you tell me that? Let's get her in here and let's have her make sure that we're not saying anything stupid. And so we did, and she actually did change a few things, including it turned out we had actually spelled something even wrong. Not that it would have mattered for the recording, but it actually changed the name of one of the pieces we were doing. So you can't always trust Google.
That's true.
Better to have someone who actually knows what they're doing.
Oh, what's the reason behind using the chorus so much this time?
It just felt like the right vibe. It's funny, the pieces we were writing just felt like they wanted to have a choir in them. So, and it was kind of funny because all three of us ended up doing it. And it's not like we all said to each other, we have to put choir in here. It just sort of evolved that way. And that's why we were shocked when we actually got to the session, how many different choir pieces we had. Now, I personally worked on a piece, I think it's called Elegy, that was a, I had done a piece that was an orchestral piece. And then I thought, you know what? I kind of like this. I think it would be cool to hear what this sounds like with just choir and strings. And so I built a whole new piece out of it for that. That's the only like piece that's pretty much choir only from beginning to end. But there was a lot of other stuff, especially in the action sequences, that had a lot of very bombastic choir stuff in it. It was so much fun doing too. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I bet. Well, now when you're in the recording sessions, everything's done separately, right? So you have just a day with the chorus and then a day with the strings. Is that how it works?
In this particular time, we were working with a local choir here because we were recording locally. And so to get the people we wanted, we had to do it at night. So we had a couple choir sessions at night. That was so much fun.
Yeah, I bet. You touched on like battle music and boss fights. And that's something that I've been thinking about a lot, the psychology of them, because it seems like you've got to balance for the player, you know, showing what an awesomely powerful and menacing boss they're dealing with, and yet you don't want the player to feel like completely defeated and demoralized and scared off. So how do you weigh kind of that whole kind of balancing act?
Wow. I would have to say that probably falls a little more on Sky's shoulders. He's a little more the guy who says, I think this would work best in this particular fighter or this particular boss or whatever like that. I tend to just put my head down and keep writing stuff. But there is, it's interesting as you get sort of towards the end of a boss battle, it really works to bring in the choir, especially you might have like the men singing, but once those women come in, oh boy, it raises the hair on the back of your neck. You know, it's like, yeah, we're getting somewhere here. This is going to be good. So I know it may seem simplistic, but that it just really works.
survivor of boss battles. Eventually, you know, I die a lot, but eventually I get there, and it really does help. And it's kind of nice. I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, angels coming in to give you that extra boost of support. I don't know, but but you're right.
Look at it.
But you're right. It really does work. You know, I'm curious about all of the people that are assisting you guys kind of in the background, the orchestrators and the arrangers and the copyists and stuff. And with all of that going on, how do you make sure that what the final product, the final performance is really true to what you intended originally?
Well, we work with a handful of people who we've worked with for a long time. So we know that they know what they're doing, and they also know what we're looking for. You know, we have those discussions. And so what happens is we, on a choral piece, for instance, I have a friend who is, I think he is a choir director. So he has, I think, he's the person who will actually orchestrate my choir stuff. And, you just get to know each other and the types of things that we like to do. So there's a huge level of trust there, because stuff goes out of our hands. Once I hand a piece over to somebody for orchestration, I want to make sure that it's really, really done. And we're pretty specific about what we're looking for. And the other thing is we get the orchestrations back. We do some back and forth with them. So I'll see them, I'll give notes on it, for this reason or that reason. And, you know, there's always those discussions, you know, should we have a flute double what the strings are doing, or are we too heavy on the sopranos here? Maybe we should spread it out a little bit more or something. I mean, we have those discussions. So hopefully the goal of all that is to get to the session and not have any surprises. Now, having said that, when you're in a live situation with lots of musicians and lots of singers, there are still surprises. You know, sometimes you'll start going through a piece and you'll realize that, you know, we needed to weight the choir a little bit differently or something. But those are things you can do right at the session and fix them on the spot normally. And that works out pretty well. But yeah, we have a pretty good group of people we work with who, again, we have a long history with.
Oh, that's fantastic. And the setting itself, where you make these recordings, at least in some cases, it looked like in the credits for The Rise of Iron, the booklet that came with, you recorded in a couple different places. But for the most part, the orchestra and the singers are in this beautiful church that's in the Seattle area.
Yes, it's Bastyr University. And that's where we recorded a lot of this stuff for this release. Some was recorded in Israel too, but because one of our composers actually lives there, wrote them. But the stuff that you see on the trailers is actually from a place not far from here. It's about a half hour from Seattle, and they have an old church there, and that's where we record. It's got a lot of good natural reverb. You know, it's got its, as a church, it was not built as a recording studio, so. Sometimes when a plane goes over, we have to stop.
Oh.
But that's life. You know, it's worth it. We recorded there on Taken King and on this one, and got some really good results. So, and of course, you know, a lot of the players around here, and the conductor, David Sabe, he's with the Seattle Symphony, and we have some good people working with us. And we certainly are lucky to have that facility to work in. I mean, you see the beautiful part. What you don't see is the control room is actually very cramped there. It's this little room behind that beautiful place where there's a bunch of us, you know, crammed in there watching on a TV screen.
Oh.
So, I mean, there's other things about it. You know, you have certain things you like about it, like the fact that it's got that beautiful reverb. But here's another story. It doesn't have air conditioning. So in the summertime when you're recording there, it can get a bit warm.
I'll bet. When I was at Vermont Public Radio, we had the same problem. We had air conditioning, but it was too noisy in the performance studio. And in the summertime, we'd have musicians coming in and doing live performances. And boy, by the end of it, everybody was just completely soaked. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's pretty common. And the other negative about that is that especially if you're there on a hot day. And the temperature starts going up throughout the day, is that actually affects the instruments.
Oh, sure.
You know, and it affects them. It's interesting. It affects them in different ways. So you have to keep checking. It will cause the strings to go flat, and it will cause the brass to go sharp. So
that's been our
experience.
Yeah.
So there's a certain amount of, like, you have to keep making sure that we're staying on pitch.
Yeah, definitely. Because unlike a live performance, which I'm sure they do there too, it's not quite as critical to have a consistent sound and a consistent, you know, people staying on pitch quite as much as with a soundtrack where everything has to be exactly the same.
Yeah, and if especially because on we might be on one day, we might be doing the brass and we might be doing the strings on a different day. So they have to, you know, so you lose that ability to actually where they can sort of self-correct and hear themselves in the room together.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives us the opportunity to have more separation on those two, so we can it gives us more flexibility mixing wise. So yeah, but that sometimes pitch can be a little bit of a problem, but we've figured it out.
Yeah, obviously, because you can't tell listening to the music, which is neat. And you mentioned that many of the performers are members of the Seattle Symphony. And earlier this year, you were talking about how you were lucky enough to hear the symphony perform all of Sibelius's symphonies. And you were kind of worried that some of his music might sneak in. So how do you do that? Like, you know, what's the tipping point when you start to think, oh, man, that just really sounds like way too much Sibelius?
You know, I have never really had that problem because I hear things and then I get ideas, but I'm, at least as far as I know, I might have possibly been accused of plagiarizing myself every now and then, because every once in a while someone will say, you know, the music from Destiny sounds like Halo, and I'm like, okay, guilty.
Well, okay, but
I mean, but it comes from that. A lot of it comes from that same blunder. But no, I've never had that problem because I'm not actually able to remember the specifics of the piece very well. But I remember the mood or the way it made me feel, and so that's the thing I kind of try to grab for. And so yeah, I've never really had much of a problem. I Sibelius musically can, I'm sure, could run circles around me. I'm a little bit slower I mean, he's a great composer. You know, I don't pretend ever to be that, but I take what I do know and I try to turn it into something that will actually work in the game and hopefully be a piece that people just, well, my ultimate goal is I don't want you to ever be able to get it out of your head.
Well, it's working. all of those themes all the way through, starting with Myth and running through Halo and now with Destiny. And I noticed Marty's name on a couple of the songs. Are those pieces
Oh, sure.
that he wrote before he left, or is he still like a peripheral part of the team?
Well, no, haven't actually worked with him directly in a few years now, but he and I wrote a bunch of stuff together before he left. And every time I quote that, you know, which we still do, because that's part of this thing that gives it the Destiny flavor, you know. Anytime I quote it, I put them on the piece. he's he was a big part of the team before he left, and occasionally we'll do a piece that where we quote a theme or a melody or something like that from before he left, and he's always on that. That's just the way we do it.
Yeah, no, that's nice because it gives a lot of, you know, just a nice continuity to the music too, I think.
A little side note there is that I was talking about how I like to write music that you can't get out of your head. Well, part of that is due to the fact that I used to work in the jingle business, and our entire goal was to get, you know, was to make little bits that would just stick in your head for days at a time. And Marty and I used to have a lot of fun doing that. And that's the world I come from. So I'm always trying to come up with little bits, a little melody, little hook, something like that, that when you wake up in the middle of the night, it's still rattling around in your head. That's the goal.
Yeah. And then you can be like your own best lab rat, because if you can't get it out of your head, then you know that it's going
to
work, right?
Oh yeah. It happens to me a lot.
Well, I know when you were initially working on the music for Destiny, there really wasn't much of a game there. And now we've seen the story mature and progress through 3 years. And you probably can't tell us this, but do you know where the story's going in the next few years?
I know some things. We're already working on the next round of stuff, and I can't say what that is. But yes, I know where the story's going on the next release. I definitely know that.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, there's ideas, there's talk, there's sketches, there's things. But, you know, those things are subject to change over time. So I try not to get too involved in anything but what's right in front of me. It just works better for me.
Yeah, probably, because then there'd be a lot of, like, changing stuff up or a lot of lost time writing stuff that wasn't even going to be needed maybe down the road. So, but it just sounds like so much fun, and it sounds like the team has just really gelled, and the soundtrack is incredible. And Mike, again, it's been so much fun to talk with you about it.
Well, we had a lot of fun working on it. And Kate, I always enjoy talking to you because you just seem so up. You're very encouraging and uplifting and happy. It makes my job easy over here.
Oh, well, thanks.